Good morning. Welcome to the February 27th, 2025 Minnesota House Representative State Government Finance and Policy Committee. We have a little bit of housekeeping to do from some previous minutes. Representative Jones, have you had a chance to renew or to review the minutes? Since we wanted to make sure that you were good with the minutes. And we're going to deal with the February 20th, 2025 minutes first. Would you like to make a motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve.
Okay. Representative Jones moves to approve the minutes from February 20th, 2025. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, we will now move to the minutes from February 25th, 2025. Representative Joy, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
I have. So moved.
Okay. Representative Joy moves to approve the February 25th, 2025 minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Our 2 minutes are approved. Members, today we have a relatively full calendar, and we are going to try to get through everything diligently. And I know that this has probably brought some people who don't normally testify regularly, so just a quick testifier's primer. We always speak through the chair. And when you are asking a question of the bill author, we wait for it to go through the chair. So we will do that. First, in front of us, we have House File 550. That's Representative Torkelson's bill. And since he is only an ex officio of this committee and can't move his own bill, I'm going to do it for him. And we will be making a motion to refer that to the Judiciary, Finance, and Policy Committee. Chair Torkelson, your bill is before the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing this bill this morning. I have to admit this is the first 8:15 hearing I've attended this year. And
isn't it glorious?
I made it in the nick of time. So I congratulate all of you for having the opportunity to be here for 8:15 hearings on a regular basis. You're very fortunate. I'm not that fortunate. Anyway, to get to House File 550, House File 550 is a constitutional amendment to establish a redistricting commission. So I am a bit of a veteran of redistricting, having been the Republican lead last time around when we did a redistricting, went through a redistricting cycle. That's the second cycle I've been through since being elected. After my first two terms, the lines changed, and I ended up with a new home in Brown County as a result of that. So I have pretty deep experience with redistricting. This moment in time, I think, is an excellent opportunity for us to consider establishing a redistricting commission. It has to be done by a constitutional amendment, but the time is right to prepare us for the next cycle. This is the right time to put it on the ballot. It's important for a number of reasons. Number one, everyone should be concerned about the possibility of any party having a trifecta during a redistricting cycle that would result in assuredly result in unfair maps. Another good reason for considering this at this point in time is the fact that we are very, very likely to lose one of our congressional seats. We have 8 currently, as you know. Tied 4-4 as far as representation goes. Making that maneuver from 8 down to 7 is going to be very challenging, very difficult, very contentious work. I believe that a redistricting commission can do that work much more effectively. I know you're not flush with time, Mr. Chair. I know there are people who would like to testify. So I think we'll move on to testifiers, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Torkelson, we can do that. Do you want to deal with me or move on to the testifiers? All right. We will move on to testimony, and then we will get to the one amendment that we have for the bill. I will call up Brian Cook from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and then we will have Tom Wiesen on deck. And then after that, we will have Mei Yang using baseball terminology, in the hole. So, well, Mr. Cook, former staffer to this committee, glad to have you back. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Great. Thanks, Chair Nash. Members of the State Government Finance and Policy Committee, my name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Taxes, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to share why we're supporting Representative Torkelson's House File 550. The Minnesota Chamber, which represents over 6,300 businesses with over 500,000 employees, supports changes to Minnesota's state election processes to allow for greater voter contact and participation. State and federal elections are critically important to businesses since they have long-lasting impacts on companies of all sizes, their employees, and the communities that they support. Like every Minnesota citizen, businesses are subject to taxes, regulations, and laws, and like citizens, businesses have a constitutionally protected right to participate in and support or oppose issues that impact them. That's why the Chamber has had a long-standing position that Minnesota should draw legislative district lines by a commission. Minnesota's current process requires the governor and legislature to pass legislation setting these new boundaries. However, for a variety of reasons, this process has not been successfully completed in over 50 years without intervention by state or federal courts. Minnesota has an opportunity right now to adopt a more effective, reliable, and transparent system before the 2030 redistricting cycle. House File 550 takes a critical step in that direction. It creates a transparent framework where political biases are exposed rather than hidden, giving Minnesotans meaningful insight into how district lines are drawn. Importantly, it ensures that substantive public participation with the actual decision makers isn't limited to those with the financial resources or legal expertise to navigate the court system. We believe that a redistricting commission should be evenly balanced in its partisanship and based on principles that are mutually agreeable by all parties and based on applicable state and federal laws. This bill's structure requires bipartisan compromise, which we anticipate will lead to fair and reasonable outcomes. Also, most relevant to this committee, we anticipate that this new commission would likely save the state money or at the very least be cost competitive to our current dual-track system. The legislature spends hundreds of thousands of dollars across the four caucuses for additional staff, software, and computer equipment to come up with maps that don't end up becoming the maps. As for the state costs on the litigation track, the largest cost driver is that the plaintiffs have been able to recover at least a portion of their legal fees in previous redistricting cycles. In the 2010 redistricting cycle, there were three groups of plaintiffs who were awarded a total of $345,000. In the 2020 redistricting cycle, there were four groups of plaintiffs, three groups received attorney's fees, and one plaintiff group declined to do so. Those fees required a $490,000 appropriation to pay back. If there are no changes, it would not be surprising to see even more groups involved in litigation, leading to even higher amounts of state appropriations for legal fees. The final details of any redistricting commission proposal will require thoughtful input from all four legislative caucuses, and we're encouraged by the bipartisan support this proposal already has. Our hope is that members can work collaboratively to find a solution that works for Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide our thoughts on this bill, and the Chamber looks forward to remaining engaged as this proposal is considered by the legislature in coming months. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Next, we have Tom Wiesen. Please, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Tom Wiesen. I'm a resident of Matamidi. HF 550 has numerous problems, but all of them are overshadowed by the major conflict of interest in its stated method of selecting redistricting committee members. Let's start with the smaller issues and work our way up. There are no exclusions for lobbyists, party leaders, party members, and other party-biased people. It's different from the current process, but it's expected to immediately become a permanent part of the Constitution despite being untested. The Constitution was designed of, by, and for we the people, not we the party. No form of political party should be mentioned in the Constitution unless it's being used in an exclusionary or prohibitive context. There is no contingency for when commissions can't agree on boundary maps. There's no defined method or frequency for reviewing the process of effectiveness over time. There's no defined process to elect the committee members. There's no defined contingency if the committee can't agree on electing committee members. There's no districting principle that addresses competitiveness of a district as a desired outcome of redistricting. But the biggest deal breaker here of this bill is the in-your-face, out-loud conflict of interest. We the people need to believe that our general election vote has some meaning, and it's not just a duopoly predefined parroting of gerrymandered districts. For this to be realized, it's a hard requirement that redistricting committee members be as impartial as possible. That doesn't mean bipartisan. Bipartisan is partisan. We need nonpartisan members as part of this redistricting committee. The idea that four of the most partisan, party-loyal, party leaders will select impartial redistricting committee members, especially given the near non-existent restrictions on members' political biases, is absurd and an insult to committee the intelligence of all of our voters. If you care about elections that represent we the people and not we the party, please vote no on HF 550.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Next, we have Mei Yang. And then on deck, we will have Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. All right. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, good morning, Chair Nash and members of the committee. My name is Mei Yang. I'm the Senior Manager of Policy and Partnerships with the Minnesota Council on Foundations.
If you would lean into your microphone just a bit.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much.
Let me scoot my chair up. Thank you. MCF is a statewide association of more than 150 grantmakers focused on ensuring Minnesota has a strong charitable sector and an inclusive democracy. We support state decisions and investments that will prepare Minnesota for a full 2030 census count and redistricting processes that put people first through fair representation. We are excited to see redistricting reform efforts in Minnesota. However, we have reservations about the model outlined in House File 550. The proposed model favors political parties and not the interests of everyday Minnesotans. Additionally, there are insufficient plans for community participation and transparency. Minnesotans deserve an independent, community-focused, accessible, and transparent redistricting process, which is necessary to ensure all Minnesotans have fair representation and influence in our democracy. As such, we urge the committee to consider the With Us, For Us redistricting amendment introduced by Representative Cleavorn last session as a model which better promotes fairness and participation. MCF knows firsthand the power of community-informed redistricting and what independent commissions can produce. In the 2021 redistricting cycle, we partnered with 12 community-based organizations to form the RMAPS Minnesota Unity Cohort. Our group educated over 400 Minnesotans about redistricting and how to draw communities of interest maps, which reflected the diversity and geography of the state. These maps were used to draw a recommended legislative and congressional map, which was ultimately submitted to the Minnesota Special Redistricting Panel. This plan kept communities of interest together, united Minnesota's northern tribes in one congressional district, and more. Most importantly, this experience demonstrated that Minnesotans not only desire to be engaged in redistricting, but they can, in fact, lead the process. In summary, we urge the committee to trust in the power of everyday Minnesotans and pursue an independent redistricting commission via the With Us, For Us redistricting amendment, which maximizes community input and participation. Doing so would best allow Minnesotans to have a role in ensuring district lines reflect changing community needs and interests. Thank you to the committee for your leadership in redistricting reform and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Yang. And next, Ms. Belladonna Carrera. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anastasia Belladonna, and I am the Executive Director for Common Cause Minnesota. We are a nonpartisan grassroots organization. While we do have a C4 arm, we do not endorse political parties or candidates. We reserve that for lobbying activities, such as this morning. Since 2018, we've led redistricting reforms with our community and democracy partners, one of which you've just heard. We looked at various models prioritizing fairness, competition, and accurate representation over party interests. We've engaged various stakeholders, including elected officials at both the state and local level. And in a nutshell, we advocate for a process that protects the integrity of the commission's interactions, centers constituents' interests, and has checks and balances in place to minimize those partisan dynamics. Some flags that we want to present to you for your consideration, you should have a detailed document that lays much more in there, are the following. While House File 550 is a bipartisan commission, and it does sound promising, it only obviously allows for the two-party participation, and again, exposing the partisan bias or whatever might be involved in the two is not enough. There should be more that brings transparency to that process. In effect, this sets up the same type of partisan dynamics that we've had and has prevented our legislative body from moving bipartisan maps in the past. The other thing is that the commission structure has resulted in deadlock in other states that have actually utilized a similar or the same, and there is no path beyond the gridlock in the bill as I currently see it. Appointees also may feel a certain sense of beholden to whichever party or politician ends up appointing them to serve on the body. House File 550 doesn't address whether or how constituents will have meaningful input in the redistricting process, and it's unclear whether the commission will be fully transparent in the decision-making process. For these reasons, at this time, we are not supporting House File 550. However, we continue to meet with Representative Torkelson. Thank you so much. He's been very generous with his time. Last year, as some of you already know, Representative Cleaver carried the Withers Forest redistricting constitutional amendment reform bill. In reviewing Representative Freiberg's DE this morning, I really am glad to see that the bulk of that bill is included in that, with a few exceptions. The most glaring was the exclusion of the backup advisory commission that when we conducted several statewide listening sessions, constituents really seemed to want to see and propose reforms. So in conclusion, I don't want you to hesitate in any way, shape, or form to reach out to myself, reach out to Emma, our policy and civic engagement manager, with any questions you may have, either with regards to 550 or with regards to our work in redistricting in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, members, Mr. Chair, particularly Representative Torkelson, Representative Cleaver, and Representative Freiberg, for all the work that you continue to do on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we move on to amendments, I will offer to members of the public who might be here, if you choose to come and testify, as I'd said at the beginning of the committee, please do so. We'll speak through the chair, and we'll give you a couple of minutes. Not seeing anybody rocketing out of their chair. Once, twice, gone. Okay, we will now move on to the DE2, who I believe that is Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Representative Freiberg moves the DE2 amendment. Representative Freiberg, to your amendment.
Thank you. So we discussed some of the issues with this proposal in the underlying bill in the Elections Committee. So there is a distinction between an independent commission, which this amendment represents, and this bipartisan commission. The approach in the underlying bill allows party leaders to choose commission members, making them more likely to be kind of politically minded people. I think we heard a bit about that from the testifiers. In the Elections Committee, there was, I remember Representative Coulter had a series of boogeymen that could end up on the commission, you know, former party chairs, notable former legislators, lobbyists, people like that. And as we heard, there's no limitations in this bill from lobbyists participating. There's also, I think, a pretty decent possibility that this could produce deadlock. I think some of the national experts who've weighed in on this issue have spoken to that. So this amendment offers one of the proposals we advanced last session. We worked with state and national experts in developing this proposal, who described it as one of the best legislatively produced proposals they'd seen. There's 15 members under this amendment. There's a requirement that they be from the largest and second largest political party, and there's a way to determine what that is. There's a requirement that there be independent members on this commission. Voting is required for a proposal to pass. It's required to have representatives of each of those groups support it. There's a lot more exclusions in the amendment than there are in this bill. Like I said, I think I'm a little troubled by some of the people who could potentially serve on the commission under this and just the interests they may have. I do think having an independent commission has been shown to be a lot more effective around the country rather than a commission that's only comprised of people representing the two major parties. So I would offer this amendment.
Okay. Representative Freiberg has moved the DE2, and I would commend you. It's not often that we see an amendment that is actually larger than the underlying bill itself. So good work on that. The paper industry thanks you. Chair Torkelson, commentary to the amendment has been offered.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, right off the bat, I'm going to recommend a no vote on the amendment. However, I will say that I am in process on this bill. I've been listening to people. I have more people to listen to. There certainly may be elements of this proposal that may be adopted into my bill. I do have to say at the end of the day, if we are going to do this, we have to put together a bill that can pass. If we make it unacceptable to too many members, it doesn't pass, and then we don't avoid the potential, I believe, disaster of the risk of not having a redistricting commission. I believe this is a point in time when we should establish one. I'm happy to work with others in reformulating this to some degree, but not to the degree that this amendment is going at this time. And with that, Mr. Chair, I again would recommend a no vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson.
May we please have a roll call on the amendment?
Roll call has been requested. We will have a roll call. Further discussion on the DE2? Seeing none, the assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
No.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Sexton.
No.
With seven no's and six yeses, the amendment is not adopted. To the underlying bill, member discussion. I see Representative Freiberg, and then we will have Representative Cleavorn. I think you're going to bat cleanup since we're using baseball metaphors today, or at least I am. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. I'm happy to bat leadoff. I don't know who the Twins leadoff hitter is going to be this year, so I was trying to think of who that would
be. Well, it's a rebuilding year already, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Hope.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Chair Torkelson. I agree with what you said about, you know, we need something that's going to pass. And unfortunately, I don't think the underlying bill is it. We heard several concerns with it from testifiers here in this committee and in the Elections Committee. I just don't think it has enough safeguards in place. I think it's likely to lead to gridlock the way it's developed with there's eight members under this bill, two appointed by each of the two largest political caucuses in the legislature. Six members of the commission have to approve it. There has to be one from each of those four caucuses. So if one of those four caucuses has kind of a bias going in to it, they have essentially veto power over the proposal. So I think, you know, and there's some issues with the criteria that are in place. The proposal I put forward has different criteria. You know, obviously that's the sort of thing we could work together on, and I look forward to working with you on this bill. But just the way it is right now, I think there's a potential for overly partisan people to be involved in the commission, not enough room for independent voices. I think there's a likelihood it could lead to gridlock, and I will not be supporting this at this time.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Torkelson, I appreciate the work that you've done here, but most importantly, your willingness and to continue to work and listen to different constituencies and ideas. So I think the bill has some reiterations to go through and considerations to do, but I'm willing to pass it out of committee. Where is the bill headed?
It is going to Judiciary, I believe. Yes.
Okay, great. So a few more stops as the bill continues to evolve, and it's been discussed for a long time, and it is not an easy issue to get agreements on. So I think we've got the right author here and appreciate the work that he's doing.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Torkelson, for bringing this bill to us today. Similarly, with Representative Freiberg, I think this is an important topic for us to be talking about. As you mentioned as well, you know, we have important redistricting likely coming up in 2030, and so this is the right time to be talking about this. I am curious, who did you work with initially to come up with this draft?
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you. As I mentioned earlier, I have quite a bit of experience in this area, so it's my own bill, as any bill, it gets drafted by the reviser.
And just as a chair's prerogative, you were not here when we did redistricting, and Chair Torkelson was our lead on redistricting, and I served on that committee, and as did Lead Cleavorn, and we met by Zoom, which was less than ideal, but he was the previous lead on that. So. Follow-up? Okay. We will move on to Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Torkelson, for the bill.
appreciate it. Concern about gridlock mentioned, and with eight members on the committee, usually we'd have an odd number to prevent a tie, but in your bill you have at least six members needing to approve any kind of a plan. Are there any incentives kind of built into your bill that would encourage members to break that tie, or how do you incentivize the actual passage of a plan with an eight-member committee?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. You've identified certainly one of the topic areas that I am actively working on. I do believe we have to build some more incentives into this for this group to actually reach a conclusion. Exactly how that happens, I don't know. I've thought about locking them into the Sistine Chapel and waiting for the white smoke to come out, but that's probably not practical. But it is important because while we cannot prevent litigation, we do want this group to agree on a map and present it. And I am thinking vigorously about just the question you're asking. How do we incentivize this group to actually get the work done?
Representative Anderson, nothing further? Seeing nobody other than Lead Cleavorn, we will go to Lead Cleavorn for closing comments from your side.
Thank you. Chair Torkelson, you and I have had many conversations over my time at the legislature, and I'm in my seventh year, about redistricting. I think we missed a golden opportunity with Chair Murphy on the Redistricting Commission to do the good work that people have charged us to do. I'm not opposed to the idea of locking the legislature into session until we come up with maps and let all 134 of us in this body figure out the right way to divide the districts as the people of Minnesota and in our Constitution have asked us to do. I think that's our duty and our obligation. Having failed that duty and obligation for many decades, as you say, I think it's important that we consider the structure, the design, and the operations of any bill that of this magnitude that would impact the people of Minnesota and their right to participate in democracy. I think you and I agree that that's a really important thing for us as legislators to hold dear. This bill is not a bill that I could ever support. And I think that you and I have an opportunity to work with others and to make this bill significantly better. I think that, the devil is always in the details with legislation, and the details are missing in this legislation. The ordering of the principles are not what the people of Minnesota have asked for. So there are things that we need to really consider and work together on. And I appreciate the fact that you and I've had conversations about working together, and I want to be respectful of that. The people are telling us this morning that this bill is not ready. So I would ask that we table this bill at this moment and continue the good work before moving it to another committee and do that work that you and I are both capable of doing with Chair Freiberg and others who are interested in this work, committee members, community members, and really get a bill that we can all be proud of and we can all support and get behind. So I would ask that this bill be tabled at this moment, and that is my motion.
Lead Cleavorn has asked that we table the bill. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, we will go to Chair Torkelson for your conclusion.
We would ask for a roll call on the final vote, please.
Roll call for our passage out of committee has been requested. Roll call will be given. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. I'll keep this brief. We could spend a long time talking about this topic. Just a couple of other points that haven't been mentioned. If you've been at all involved with redistricting, you know how sophisticated this process has become via the computer systems that are available to analyze every detail of a map. I believe that this joint commission could utilize that technology in a more fair and useful way than the current system. Litigation is unavoidable, but if we have a good map, that litigation won't go far. I do agree the the incentive to reach an agreement is important. And the other thing I would mention is that this bill already has bipartisan support. It has a DFL author in the Senate. So that is a very, very important first step. And if we can build on some of the details here, perhaps we can broaden the support of this bill as we go forward. And I thank you for hearing it today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. The assistant will take the roll. And I will renew my motion that House File 550 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Policy Committee. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis.
Aye.
Representative Anderson. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Yes.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sexton.
Yes.
With seven ayes and six nays, Chair Torkelson, your bill is on its way to judiciary. Okay, thank you very much. Next, we will have House File 412. Representative Myers is bringing a box of what ought to be treats.
Well, I got in trouble twice this week, so.
Hey, while he is doing that, I will say that he's got some testifiers. If you those testifiers would like to move up to the chairs behind the podium there where he will be presenting. And since you are not a member, Representative Myers, I will move House File 412 to come before the committee, and we will be moving it with a referral to education policy. So, Representative Myers, to your bill, House File 412.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lee Cleavorn. I think this is a good time to talk about this bill, being that it is Public Schools Week. This bill, House File 412, what I refer to as the boots on the ground, is related to our educators. This is a bipartisan effort. I do want to thank Representative Faulkner, Representative Norris, and then Senator Soswinski in the Senate is carrying it, as well as Representative Censor Mira recently added herself as a co-author. So this bill came about, I'm a father of four kids. I spend a lot of time in my schools talking to my teachers, administrators, and also my sister's a teacher in my district. You know, our job as legislators is not to, we need to listen to people. We need to listen to people down here in the dome. But to me, more importantly, we need to start listening to the people back at home that are executing on the policies that we put forward. And those policies relate to supporting our schools, supporting our teachers, and supporting our students. What this bill does is requires anybody on an education, finance, and policy committee to shadow an educator, administrator, a finance chair for 12 hours over a two-year period. I've seen a lot of popularity on this bill. I've gotten a lot of parents and students and teachers reaching out to me saying, thank you for bringing this forward. This is something that what I'm trying to do is amplify the voice of those students, of those educators down here at the Capitol, so that, just like the bill, bipartisan, working together to produce those best policies in our schools. I do have, I think, a few testifiers today, several letters in support, so we can move on to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Myers. First, we'll have Claire Luger. Please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Claire Luger. I'm a teacher in White Bear Lake area schools. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Chair Nash and members of the committee. Let me start by saying how much I appreciate this bill. Direct experience and observations matter. As a city council member in Wyoming, I've had the invaluable opportunity to participate in a training simulation with our fire department. Because it's tough to better understand the urgency of updating SCBA equipment than wearing one while crawling through a building during a live burn training. Similarly, in education, it's critical to know the what and why of your bill's subjects. Public education is necessarily a huge part of our state budget, and legislators should understand why that is. In an era where we have access to a flood of information, it is sometimes difficult to know what's accurate and what's not. Also, most people think they know schools because they went to school, and their experience may or may not be reflective of the newer challenges that our schools face. First-hand experience is important. You wouldn't know the exhaustion of teaching a seventh grade history course of 35 students, seven of whom receive special education services for different disabilities on a day where half of our para staff is out sick without being there. It is incredibly difficult to hire paras in the first place. So when those things happen, it makes a difference. And you wouldn't know how critical it is for every struggling student to have a go-to person when they return to school from having a mental health crisis without actually being there to see it. And you wouldn't know the seamless work of the building crisis prevention intervention team when a student has lost all emotional regulation and is about to harm themselves without being there and seeing it. There is nothing that replaces the authenticity of that observation. It is important for policymakers to see the impact of responsive teachers who have created caring relationships with students and how that creates an optimal learning situation. It is also important for policymakers to see overcrowded classrooms and understaffed schools in order to address those things effectively. Test scores, curriculum, and standards matter, but the stats alone have never told the full story. One change I would suggest is to consider limiting observations to the classroom or adding language that devotes a certain percentage of time to the classroom, if only because it requires a slightly more extended time in a classroom to understand the flow of activities. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Luger. Next, we'll have Rachel Falkowski. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to address you this morning as well. My name is Rachel Falkowski, and I am currently the president of the Wayzata Education Association Teachers Union, but I have also been a first grade teacher in Wayzata Public Schools for 19 years. And I am here to speak on behalf of Representative Myers, and I am in support of this bill. And when I was coming here this morning and I was thinking about what I was going to speak on, there were simply too many stories that I was thinking about telling, because I was thinking, would I tell about my class size of 28 first graders that I had last year, and how there were days that I cried, because there were days that I thought about certain students of mine, and they weren't high academic or behavior needs, but I had days where I wondered if I had even spoken to those children on certain days. But that crushed my teacher heart, because they were 6 years old and they still deserved my need and they still needed my love and my attention. I thought about telling, do I tell you how in my current role as union president that I listen to teachers weekly cry because they are so overwhelmed by special education caseloads or new reading mandates and expectations put on them for data collection and progress monitoring that they are expected to do with their students. Changes in standards and new curriculum, increased mental health needs in students, and navigating students in crisis without enough support or training to do so. How those teachers are feeling so completely burned out by the excessive load of things that are continuing to be added to their plates while nothing is being taken off. Their class sizes are continuing to grow while support continues to decrease, and teachers are asked to do more with less resources and less support. There are simply too many real-life stories that I could share with you today, but there is simply just not enough time. But what I can tell you is that our education system is in crisis, and it's not sustainable. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, nearly 9 in 10 Minnesota school districts report being significantly impacted by the teacher shortage, and that they're having difficulty in securing substitute teachers, and that has nearly doubled in the last 2 years. We also know that we have less people going into teaching programs, which means we have less college graduates with teaching degrees coming out to replace teachers that have either left the profession or are retiring. Another startling statistic from MDE is that enrollment in teaching programs at higher education institutes is half of what it was a decade ago, and that nearly a third of new teachers are leaving the teaching profession within the first 5 years. Our education system is in crisis, and it's not sustainable. However, I do truly believe that public education is one of the most democratic foundational institutes in America, one of the great ideas our nation is founded on, free public education. It's a right for all. Right now, it's a little tattered and frayed at the seams, but it's worth fighting for. There's not an easy fix. I wish there was. But what I ask is that you come into schools. You visit classrooms. You talk with teachers who are living it and breathing it in the trenches every single day, giving their hearts, time, and energy because they know how incredibly important this work is. Ask us what we need and admit that you don't maybe know something instead of throwing around educational buzzwords. Ask us questions. Engage in conversations with educators. Come sit in an elementary classroom, read with kids, or listen to them read. Sit in a special education classroom to witness the extensive needs of students that we service and the gifted staff who give endlessly without enough support to try to meet the needs of our most vulnerable students. Come sit in a high school history class. Take a standardized test that students are required to take so you can appreciate the test anxiety that students have to endure, and then maybe start to wonder if the data that test is collecting is really hitting the mark. Lastly, as you know, media is rarely fair or balanced, and you might already have opinions based on unions or teacher pay or how educators might not be doing enough to close the achievement gap. But I ask that you leave your biases at the door and just remember that you're representing everyone in your district, not just the people that agree with you. But in summary, I am in support of this bill. I ask that as the committee, you consider amending the bill a bit and ask that half the hours are spent with classroom teachers. It's crucial that as you are making decisions about educational spending, you are spending time with those who can tell you where it will really make a difference, that you are spending time with those of us that are in the trenches, that you are experiencing firsthand, and you are getting a true lens of what we as educators and students are facing today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Falkowski. Next, we have Scott Grinquist. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Grinquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of Representative Myers' bill today. And thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this forward. I know members that probably all of you regularly communicate with your local school officials, and I know they greatly appreciate that. But we think this step, kind of taking it to another level and really requiring those legislators serving on the education committees, the ones who really form, you know, the policies that are going to have a huge impact on our schools, makes a lot of sense. While we like to think of ourselves as a local control state, the reality is the decisions all of you make here have a tremendous impact on our schools. Everything from funding to graduation standards to safety and security measures to employment law, all down the line, really has a huge impact. And so having the chance to step into a school, talk to those educators, those administrators, and really get the sense of how the policies that you have enacted impact them just makes a lot of sense. So again, I'll cut it short there, Mr. Chairman. I know you have a busy agenda, but I will just close by noting that I also really couldn't resist the opportunity to testify in support of a bill that would put a mandate on legislators. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grinquist. Would a member from the public like to testify? Once, twice, gone. All right, we will move on to member commentary. I have Representative Cleburne on close. We'll go to Representative Kosnick first, and then we have a list of people. Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Vice Chair Myers, thank you for picking up where the Transportation Committee has taught you well to share the snacks with the committee. And I appreciate the intent of this bill, and I was kind of thinking to the testifier, Mr. Grinquist, putting a mandate on the legislature. I have some concerns about setting a bad precedent, but more to the bill and the intent that I think is well-intentioned and good, and we've started doing principle for the day, and I've used that as an opportunity. I've probably already met the 12-hour requirement, and I'm not even on the Education Finance Committee. I think it's upon us as legislators to be involved in our districts, and I think that's the well intention of your bill, and just have some concerns that I think we should be aware of being on other committees. Where are we supposed to, where can this continue to go and kind of a slippery slope and transportation, you know, make sure you have get a trucker's driver's license and some other things like that maybe aren't necessary, but I feel like we're almost catering to certain special interest groups. I think our schools obviously are critically important, one of the core things that we do here as a state and fund. Your next bill is very similar, you know, but we could see where this could continue to go. So I'm willing to continue to support the bill moving it out of committee. I like the intention of the bill. I think legislators, if you haven't, I'd be shocked if you haven't, but going into the schools is just, you know, one of the most fun things that I can do. Got to go to Lakeville North High School, and the principal surprised my daughter when I walked into her language class, but let me do the Pledge of Allegiance, and I enjoy spending the time talking to the counselors, the teachers, and getting updated on what they do, but I can do that without a mandate. But good work on the bill and the idea, and I appreciate you bringing it forward, and we'll continue to have discussion about it.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Before we proceed to Representative Jones, I'll just say we have two more bills, and we have the entire DFL side wanting to ask questions or comments. So if we don't get done the last bill or the next to last bill, we're just going to find another day to do it, if at all. So let's be judicious. Representative Jones.
May I give direction to my side?
By all means.
So on the DFL side, I would say to you, the two bills are very similar. Right? They do the exact same thing with two different professions. So if you have points that you want to make about just the nature of the bills, please do so with one bill, and then we can, because the bills are identical at just different professions. So
thank you, Representative Cleburne. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Myers for bringing this to us. Similar to Representative Kosnick, I really appreciate the spirit and the intent of this bill. I think, yeah, in order to understand the work of this work at the legislature, we actually need to be in our communities and understanding what's happening, you know, the boots on the ground. One of the things I am curious about, you know, we all come to the legislature from different professions, and so I know there's even a member who is a principal who serves with us, and so I'm wondering what would the implications for a person like that be with this bill?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Jones. You know, this is really about getting people outside of their comfort zone. You know, I think I've heard some, you know, statements from, you know, both sides of the aisle. If you're out there listening to your teachers and your educators, you know the level of frustration they have that we are stuck down here in this dome and we're not listening to them. That impact of 12 hours, if you're doing principal for, you know, a day, that's potentially 3 hours right there. You're looking at a day and a half of your time. I've had another legislator that seemed more concerned about the pay related to this bill, if that's a message people want to put out there. You know, we're all making sacrifices for public service. What I would say is there's per diem that goes along with this bill. We are a part-time legislature. I would think we'd want to be as educated as possible so that everyone here could go back to their districts, come back to those committees, and share those personal experiences. Because what I've seen down here, and I'll use myself as well, you know, we're missing that humility that educators, administrators testified to down here. I could spend some more time in a high school because I have little kids. They're not in a high school. I need to get outside that comfort zone. So that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers. I'm not quite sure that answered my question. So just actually pulling from my own experience, I've taught in a classroom. I actually was thinking of becoming a teacher, so I spent a lot of volunteer hours in the classroom in downtown Minneapolis. And so I'm just thinking about kind of to Representative Kosnick's point about mandates and, like, I have concerns about that, and when we're mandating something that is potentially unnecessary, particularly for members who already have that kind of on-the-ground experience, not to say we shouldn't be keeping that up to date, but I think that particular instance is not recognized in your bill.
Can I follow up to that?
We're going to move on to
Sure.
I'm trying to yep. Make sure that you get to your next bill.
The next bill will be quicker.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I have any tests fired for the next one because they're all here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Myers, I really appreciate the intent of these bills. I find myself in quite a bit of agreement with Representative Koznick on his sentiment on this. We can record that. My question for you, and then I'll have just a quick closing statement, it will apply to both bills, is why these two committees? Why not all committees? Because we all do very important work, and so why these two?
Representative Myers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, thank you for that question. You know, to be honest, I get a lot of people reaching out to me to do things like this for other committees, and actually this bill is a really tamed down version of what the PAGE program, I mean, I met with them three times, what they wanted. I think this is a really good opportunity from a, you know, second term member here that, again, isn't the most politically minded person to come in here and see what I've seen from myself and other legislators, that this would be a really good start to help us all. I mean, I think everybody in this room, you've all said it, getting into a classroom, spending time with paraprofessionals, watching what they do every day will help us make better policies. If we can, you know, agree on doing that, I mean, I don't know why we wouldn't support this bill, especially when we threw a ton of mandates on our school. And I'm trying not to get into that, but this is a great opportunity for us to do something small to show our most dedicated educators, parents. I mean, there's a lot of people that are frustrated right now. And to me, this is a really good time you know, to open that door, extend, you know, our willingness to listen and learn.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Myers, I appreciate all those sentiments, but you didn't answer my question. Maybe you can at a later point of why these two committees. I agree that, you know, spending times in schools and with public safety folks is a best practice. I've done it, right? But you haven't answered why these two, and I said, I'll go back to Representative Koznick, said I have real concerns about trying to legislate best practices on all these committees, and that how are we going to make those decisions? And so I'm against this for those reasons, but I really do appreciate the sentiment. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I?
We're going to move on to Representative Clardy.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Nash. Thank you, Representative Myers. Just a clarifying question. As you know, I'm a teacher, okay? So when I'm not here, I'm at the school. And there are a lot of professionals like that in education that are on the education committee. Same thing with public safety commission or committee. Our jobs, does that count as part of the hours, or are we additionally mandated the other 12 hours? And then also, if you could just kind of explain how you came up with 12 hours.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for that. You know, start with the 12 hours. Again, you know, a lot of people I spoke to wanted this to be a much greater ask from our legislators, given what, you know, we've seen over the past couple of years. You know, you look at the breakdown of an elementary school, a middle school, a high school, and the administrators. I mean, if you look at that, that's 3 hours apiece. For each one of those areas. To me, that was a good amount of time to go and, you know, talk to those particular professions. Remind me what your other question was, sorry.
Representative Clardy, quick.
Okay. I'm a teacher. I'm there the other half of the year. Am I required to do the other 12 hours, or does my service count as those 12 hours?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would say, based on the report that's provided, you could fill out that report and then submit it.
Representative Clardy. Nothing further? Okay, we'll move on to Representative Bonner.
I'll pass and save it for the next
one. Okay, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Just to continue the love fest for the trenchant insights of Representative Koznick on my side of the aisle. I just have a different type. I mean, certainly I see the value in this, too. I've spent a lot of time both in schools. You know, I did a ride, you know, for the next bill, I did a ride along with the State Patrol one time and found that extremely informative and helpful. But I guess I'm just not aware that we've ever mandated, I mean, I know we're both attorneys also, we have to do continuing legal education. This is like a continuing legislative education requirement, which I think is a new interesting concept. And the way it's enforced, it's on line 1.18, it says the House and the Senate must adopt rules to implement this session. I'm not aware of anywhere where we've mandated that either chamber adopt rules and mandated it in statute. I'm not sure how that would get enforced. The only way to enforce a rule of the House or Senate is through the Ethics Committee, and I'm not sure failing to meet this requirement rises to the level of an ethics violation. So that's a little unusual. And it seems to me like actually the leadership could just, if this is something the leadership felt strongly about, they could just include it in the rules package at the beginning of the session. Is that, did you, I guess, so my question is, did you talk to your leadership about potentially including some sort of requirement like this in a rules package at the beginning of the session?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. I did not. Again, a lot of this is trying to get people out of the dome and back home, listening to their constituents. You know, spending that time in school, I think that's our job. We've got, 40,000 constituents that, you know, I know I'm really concerned about. I know you're really concerned about. So that's where the priority lied.
Thank you.
And before we go to Representative Quam, Representative Myers, remind the committee who your co-authors are from both sides.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it's Representative Sensor-Mura, Representative Faulkner, Norris, Bakeberg, Witte, and then it's being carried in the Senate by Senator Suswinski.
Okay, very good. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two suggestions. One, should have a background in, or have should instead of the must, because if it's out there, every 2 years, the public will be reminded if you aren't engaged in that area, and that might be a better way of disciplining or having an effect on that. So those are my two suggestions, should instead of must, and include that if you've got that background, a lot of farmers on the Ag Committee, I would love to see representatives stack hay with me when I was baling as a kid. But thank you.
We're going to move to Representative Cleburne to close for the DFL side. Representative Cleburne.
Okay, thank you. And I love it that Mr. Kronquist is here with us today, because Mr. Kronquist can tell you I have spent decades and many, many hours in the public school system. And I don't serve on the K-12 committees, but it doesn't mean that you don't know and you don't talk. The other thing that I have learned through this process, oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I didn't address you first. The other thing I've learned through this process is some of the best conversations I've had with teachers about their needs is outside of the classroom, because there they're free to speak. I'm in their neighborhood, I'm at their door, they're talking to me about what's really going on in their classroom. Not what the administrator might want them to tell me, but that real honest dialogue that we should all be having with our constituents every day as much as possible. But I want to talk about the mechanics of your bill. And Rep. Kosnick, I'll give you a dollar. This is really a mandate on a citizen legislature. And you mentioned it and referenced it that people have other jobs half of the year, right? That's what we do. We're a citizen legislature. And I am able and fortunate enough, because I've had a full career, to be able to go and do as much time as I want in my community, and I do. I spend a lot of time there, and I work 365 days for my community every year. However, the bill, the mechanics of the bill itself, you have neglected to take care of the details. There is no fiscal note to this. And just sitting here, right here, listening to your testimony, you said 3 hours should be sufficient. We have 201 legislators. If we do, I mean, there are 32 different things for this committee that we could go and spend time on, right? 32 very different things. If we required committee members to go and spend 12 hours on each committee subject topic, right? So we have 201 legislators. You're saying 12 hours. We average serve on three committees at least, right? My back of the envelope cost for this bill is $207,000 per year. That's just a back of the envelope cost. Have you spoken to the librarians about this bill?
Representative Myers, just before we jump into that, I believe that there was a fiscal note for this bill last year when you did it. Do you remember what that number was?
Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly, but for this particular bill from the Senate and the House, 20 members, I mean, I think you're looking under $10,000.
Representative Cleburne, and I'll just say I understand the commentary. We'll try to not be evasive as we're answering the question, Representative Myers. Go ahead.
Is there a fiscal note for this bill, Mr. Chair?
Representative Myers, have you requested one?
A fiscal note has not been requested yet.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Lee Cleburne.
These bills have costs, real costs. A fiscal note should be here. An appropriation should be in the bills. The other thing I ask, have you spoken to the librarians about this bill?
Representative Myers.
Representative Cleburne, librarians, can you be more specific here or?
Lee Cleburne.
In your bill, I would refer you to line 1.16 and 1.17. There is a requirement of the librarians. Have you spoken to the librarians?
Chair.
Representative Myers.
Representative Cleburne. No, I have not. I worked with nonpartisan staff in drafting this.
Lee Cleburne.
Okay. You are requiring the librarians and the reference library to do work. You are requiring a modification of their website. Have you spoken to them about that work?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lee Cleburne, I have not. This bill is making its way to education policy. So there will be time from the feedback from this committee as I continue to work with teachers and administrators and other members that are on the bill before it gets to that committee.
Lee Cleburne.
Thank you. So with no fiscal note, no discussion about the IT requirements that this bill requires, I'm going to ask that this bill be tabled and that it not go forward, and I'll ask for a roll call on that, please.
A roll call has been requested to lay the bill on the table. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Nope.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg. Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Sexton.
No.
With seven nays and six ayes, the bill is not laid on the table. Chair Cleburne, or Lee Cleburne, would you like to close?
Yep, I'm happy to close. I want to thank you for speaking with me yesterday, even though we were doing a walk and talk. I appreciate the intent of the bills. But when you think about subject matter for every committee, when you think about the requirements that you are asking, 12 hours, it is a very slippery slope, and it is a very expensive bill, even though you think at this moment it is not. I would ask you to please take this into consideration as your bill moves forward. I can't support this bill at this moment. I'm going to let my committee members vote. They have their own certificates. They can vote however they wish on these bills. I would ask that you please take a look and make the bills better if you intend really seriously for them to move forward. But understand, as Chair Freiberg talked about, this could have gone to rules. You're talking about permanent rules. You're talking about ethics violations. You're talking about tracking legislative work. You're talking about mandating legislative work. And you're not taking into account any of the costs for any of this. And you haven't even talked about what it would be on a local impact, right? What does it actually cost our school districts? How much time is that taking from our teachers who are already strapped for time? When we can have these conversations with our districts when they invite us in, and we do go oftentimes. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Cleburne. Before we go to your conclusion, I'll say, Representative Myers, you've heard a lot of input. I would really encourage you as this moves along the way to take some of the criticism that you've heard from both sides of the aisle here and try to incorporate that into your bill. Certainly, we want to know as much as we possibly can about the things that are going on in our district that we will vote on. So I again, will encourage you to work very closely with all the criticisms that you've heard here in committee. To your close.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing this. I do think this bill has something for everybody. I mean, I know you guys had discussed, you know, the work we do down here, but again, we have to make sure that we are listening to the boots on the ground. This bill has something for everybody. If you support educators, if you support kids, paraprofessionals, administrators, the bipartisan support here, we'll continue to work on this bill. But we know that our jobs down here have dramatic impacts, and I'm willing to step forward, and I know many of my colleagues are as well, to support our educators, and I would just ask members to support this bill.
Okay, with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 412 be moved to education policy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill is passed out of committee. We'll move to education policy. We will next bring the next Myers bill, House File 796, before the committee. The chair moves that House File 796 be referred to Public Safety and Finance Policy Committee. And I'll just start us off as by saying we've talked about a lot of the mechanics of this particular bill, and I'll hearken back to Lee Cleburne's recommendation that we've largely dispensed with some of those things. We will talk to the particular notion of this being a ride-along for the public safety, and then we'll try to move on to Representative Bonner's bill afterwards. So, Representative Myers, your bill has been brought before the committee. Please proceed.
I'd like if you could move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Chair moves the A1.
Thank
please
you, Mr. Chair.
Your A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, supporting our dedicated law enforcement officers and firefighters isn't just about protecting them or supporting them financially. It's about listening and learning to what they do every day on their jobs to create those policies that keep all of our communities safe. As you saw, very similar to the last bill, 12 hours, right along law enforcement, firefighters. I'm going to tell a very quick story.
Oh, Representative Myers, why don't we dispense with your A1? Are you speaking to the A1 or are you speaking to the underlying bill?
Just A1.
Okay, proceed.
Well, sorry, Mr. Chair, that is just to get it in the order I'd like.
Okay. I didn't know if you were offering new commentary on the A1 or just talking about the underlying bill. So Representative Myers has moved his A1. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A1 is adopted to the underlying bill, absent the commentary you've already offered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
See, I can be
again, you know, to respect the committee's time, this is just another opportunity for us to get outside of our comfort zone and see every day what law enforcement firefighters go through. I know there's several council members here that have been through, you know, use of force training, and man, there's some really good things that happen in that. And as we're trying to serve our communities, not only the dedicated law enforcement officers, their families, but, you know, everyday citizens, keeping them safe, I think this is a bill that leads to bringing more a collaborative effort moving forward. Again, this is another bipartisan bill, and I would ask for member support.
Okay, we will open it up to member commentary. Representative Kraft feels once again to jump. Okay, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Myers, I'm going to give you one other chance. Why not a mandate on this committee, this one you're in?
Representative Myers, and tread lightly on mandating things for our committee.
Representative Kraft, for your clarification, why not mandating state gov do this?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why not mandate something of the members of the State Gov Committee? Why not mandate something that we need to do, like you're doing these committees?
Thank you, Representative Kraft. You know, within my experience, within my, you know, door knocking of 13,000 doors, there were three things that came up that people wanted to have a little bit to make sure our legislators were a little bit more aware of things. Those were child care, those were education, and those were public safety. Those are the three boots on the ground bills that I drafted. That's why these three bills came. Well, these two bills came.
Representative Kraft, anything further?
Mr. Chair, just my question wasn't answered, but thank you.
Okay. Other member questions? Okay. Representative Bonner.
Very briefly, I would just like to suggest, Mr. Chair, that it would be really great if state government folks did cybersecurity training.
Well, Representative Bonner, I'm not sure we have enough. I'm not sure we have enough caffeine to keep non-practitioners awake while we talk about cybersecurity. I worry that they might nod off, because while you and I find it exciting, not so much for everybody else. I have Representative Cleburne to close.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a very interesting proposition that you raised, Representative Kraft. We do exciting work on StateGov, right? You could maybe require us to follow the governor for 12 hours or the state auditor or the Department of Revenue, or, you know, maybe we could go into the nonprofit sector and look and see how they do their work. There are many things that each of our committees are responsible for. And really, if the I think the reason I'm so upset about these bills is the assumption that you are making that your colleagues don't care enough to do their job. I think that is probably the most galling piece of this legislation that I have. We all spend, every one of us, spend many, many, many more hours than 12 in our committees listening to our constituents. And so I would say to our members, this bill is not needed. It's not necessary. It is costly. And I would ask you to get to know your colleagues better, because many of us have great dedication. The other thing is, I would ask that you please be willing, and I know you have voted on some of these bills, but I expect that you will be supporting all of the budget requests that our educators have, that our firefighters have, that our first responders have, that all of our IT systems are going to be up to date so we can do this at a whim. We can just jump on it and be ready to go. These bills are not cheap, and I ask you to please look into the fiscal part of this as well. Thank you.
Okay, before we go to Representative Myers for closing, I will again say continue to work with the criticism that you've heard. I myself have gone on many ride-alongs with the State Patrol, Carver County. I was in Minneapolis the night of the second round of riots and saw some really horrible stuff. I will say, Representative Myers, please be please listen to the number of hours that are being mandated in your bills. So to your close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, you know, appreciate the members hearing these bills. I think, as many of you said, how important it is that we're doing our job, and many of us are. And, you know, I just, you know, I love the support that we're seeing in some of these, from the Sheriff's Association to MPPOA, as well as the Professional Firefighters Association. Looking forward to hearing this in public safety, and I would ask everybody to support the bill.
Okay. Chair renews his motion to refer House File 796 to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
No.
The bill is on its way. Next, we will have Representative Bonner. House File 140 will come before the committee, and we will be laying this over. But since you are a member of the committee, I don't need to move your bill for you. You can have the honor of doing so yourself.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 140 before the committee.
Okay. House File 140 is before the committee. To your bill.
And, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, the A1.
Okay. Would you like to move your A1?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A1, and I will mention here also that there were, I believe, two potential drafting errors, so we may dispense with this, but if you would be willing to accept an oral amendment to fix the drafting errors, we might be able to do that as well.
Okay. When we do things like this, I always like to have nonpartisan go to the microphone so at least we can walk through what that is.
Correct.
So, Mr. Sullivan, if you... I'm talking slowly so he has time to walk to the microphone. So we have the A1. Representative Bonner, now that Mr. Sullivan is there, if you could point out to the committee where the errors are, and if they are of a minor change, we can do that. But also given the fact that we're going to be laying this over, I'm sure Lead Cleburne will agree that we can fix it as we're going through the committee process. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. briefly, the amendment itself makes some primarily technical changes to conform with the Senate. It also adds an agreement that we have with the Minkitla and the townships that allows us to add townships of over 5,000 as potential eligible folks on the bill as well. And I will let nonpartisan staff speak to the nature of the oral amendment. But essentially, we did have an agreement that the threshold for townships would be 5,000.
President Bonner, can you point out the lines that those would be referenced in?
Yes. The first... the oral amendment, I'm sorry, if you're looking at the amendment, line 1.6, it says a town with a population greater than, that should read a population greater than 5,000.
Mr. Sullivan?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, Representative Bonner incorporates the following change into her A1 amendment. Page 1, line 6, delete the ellipsis and insert 5,000.
Okay. And is there a second change that needs to be made as well, or is that the only change?
My apologies. That's it.
Okay, Mr. Sullivan, that's easily done for you. Okay, so we are going to make the oral amendment to the underlying amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Very well. The A1 has been moved. It has been amended, so we will. Vote to adopt the A1 amendment as amended. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Your bill has been amended. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we are all giddy to talk about cybersecurity. At
Some
least
of
two
us
of us in the room. All right. Nationally, the number of cyber incidents are mind-boggling and on the rise every day. As AI tools improve, so does the ability of hackers to stage a successful cyber attack. With each day, novice hackers using tools they bought off the dark web, a literal do-it-yourself kit in a shiny cyber box, can launch an attack. Failure to be vigilant is not an option in today's world. Imagine Minute, with all of the latest and greatest tools, working to fend off 5,224 incidents just last year, with a full-trained crack team of cyber professionals. What would it look like for our small rural counties, our cities, and our townships with no staff on hand, aging infrastructure, and little or no cyber tools at their disposal? We all know the legislature sets the budget, but we rely on our partners in local government to implement vital services to our citizens. So the challenge to many of our counties, cities, and smaller towns lacking staff or funding is to upgrade aging equipment, software, or modernize their cybersecurity infrastructure to steel their defenses. Why would that matter to all of us here in these seats? Well, we may recall a few years back that there was a massive data breach at Target. What's notable about the incident was that Target was vigilant about securing infrastructure and updating its security tools to prevent exactly this type of incident. However, the hacker didn't enter through the front door, but rather snuck in through a trusted vendor to gain access to the data. It was an epic disaster at the time, sending sales plummeting, and took years to regain trust. More recently, United Health, also tight on security, acquired a new company whose security was not as sound. The fallout lasted months after the incident. We're only as strong as our weakest link. IT modernization, increased cybersecurity tools and infrastructure benefit all Minnesotans and strengthen the ability of our state and our partners to deliver the services our neighbors need most. Imagine the fallout if our state government or our partners in the counties and cities could not meet the services our committees and our neighbors rely on every day. Imagine that time it would take to regain that trust. This bill is a start, creates critical investments to position our partners in government, secure critical assets and data, place them in the path to a secure future, and provide trust to our neighbors. And more importantly, it creates a whole of Minnesota plan for stronger security posture and a robust future. The bill has bipartisan authorship in the House and Senate and has the support of the IT caucus members who are on the bill. I ask you to support House File 140, and I have two testifiers.
Okay, we have Mr. Lightfoot, League of Minnesota Cities. Please come to the table, introduce yourself to the committee, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League represents the collective interests of our 841 member cities across the state. I want to thank Representative Bonner for chief authoring House File 140 in the House. For you, Mr. Chair, for always being engaged on cybersecurity issues, both within the private sector and public sector, as this bill deals with. Representative Bonner discussed, House File 140 addresses a critical need that local unit of governments have, especially those that are under-resourced, to provide resources that will bring those under-resourced cities, counties, and now our township, a few of our township friends, up to a baseline level of cybersecurity capability. As this committee knows, we are a small city state, but those small cities still manage critical infrastructure like water, wastewater treatment facilities, energy generation and distribution, dams and levees, police and EMS, transportation infrastructure, et cetera, as well as manage a lot of sensitive data for our residents, which has made them more and more a target for ransomware attacks. To give you a sense of the cybersecurity capabilities of our cities, of the 150 cities with populations above 5,000, only 83 of them employ IT staff or some type of managed service and will stand to benefit the most from the already existing federal funding for some of these topics as well, due to their more sophisticated networks that boast above minimum recommendations for active network management, as well as hardware and software capabilities. The remaining 702 cities in this state don't have dedicated IT staff and on average have a total of about seven FTEs working with the city in total, with almost a third of them having only one FTE or less. These cities have minimal technology, lack minimal hardware and software capabilities, including basic data backup systems and data security, which are critical for a baseline cybersecurity posture. What we at the League and through our League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust, which provides property casualty coverage for most of the cities in this state, are seeing on the ground is a marked uptick in cybersecurity claims due to ransomware attacks. We're seeing more data breaches. We're seeing more attacks. We're seeing more unauthorized access. The bill intended is to fill those gaps that we're seeing across the state, and to make those federal funds that I mentioned go further to ensure critical infrastructure and sensitive data is protected in all of our communities from malicious attacks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I am happy to stand for questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Next, we'll have Granberg Moberg. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start by thanking members for taking the time to hear this and Representative Boehner specifically for being sensitive to our concerns. My name is Granberg Moberg. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. We represent 1,776 townships in the state of Minnesota. It's about 16% of the population. It's about 9,000 township officers. Now, we wholeheartedly support the cause of making Minnesota's governments safer in cyberspace. Now, unlike our compatriots in the cities and the counties, it's less common for us to manage critical infrastructure. Nevertheless, we do, as a matter of course, deal with a lot of sensitive information to do with our citizens. Now, hard data for us is a bit ticklish in this area, but as a rough proxy, the Small City and Town Accounting System, which is a program developed by the Office of the State Auditor, one that we do recommend, and we like quite a lot, 1,185 townships use it, and inherently as part of using that, We are collecting things like W-2s, W-4s, social security numbers. We do not have a whole lot of infrastructure in place presently to protect that sort of thing. Given the way the world is working, the increased pressure of online-only reporting systems, we would expect more townships to become vulnerable to cybersecurity over time. Now, obviously, we would like, to the legislature to wave a magic wand and to fix this with the giant money tree, that we're sure you all have. But we understand that this is a budget shortfall year, and we view this compromise, this $5,000 compromise, as a good step towards building security for our governments and for our citizens in cyberspace. Thank you.
Well, I've looked around here for 11 years, and I've not seen that tree. Maybe one day we can take a field trip, and if we can find it, we'll all circle around it and shake it. Thank you very much. I will open this up to other members of the public. Once, twice, okay. Member questions? Seeing none. Representative Anderson, you have time.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had to do a quick check of the clock. Appreciate the bill. Just have a question, a clarification of your language in your amendment. It says eligible entity is a city, county, or town with a population greater than 5,000. Are you excluding just townships under that threshold, or also cities and counties under that 5,000 population?
Representative Bonner.
I believe we can check with nonpartisan staff, but that was intended to be, I believe, a township with a population greater than 5,000.
Mr. Sullivan, would you like to give a thumbs up, thumbs down, or go to the microphone? Thumbs up. That's per Chair Representative Bonner's answer just now. Chair Anderson, would you like that reiterated?
Yeah, so you're saying it just pertains to townships. But it seems to me the way it's written, it says city, county, or town with a population greater than 5,000. I would just suggest a little bit of clarifying language on that line. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. And given that this is going to be laid over, we'll be working on this as it proceeds forward. So anybody else? Lead Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Vice Chair, Representative Bonner, I will say thank you so much for your work and dedication to all of our municipalities on this really important bill, and for your dedication and support in making sure that our systems are safe and secure and as a public can have confidence in them. So thank you very much.
Representative Bonner, to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just close briefly with saying, really this is about two things. I think having the ability to update our cybersecurity posture for all of our partners means that we don't lose the trust of citizens who are relying on us to deliver our critical services. And the other issue is, quite frankly, when a cyber incident occurs, it tends to cost a lot of money. And it costs a lot of taxpayer money. And so really getting ahead of this is really important for all of us to do that. Not to mention that, like it was mentioned earlier, a lot of these entities have critical data, things like social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, sometimes credit card information, and all of the like, that I'm pretty sure our citizens would expect and want all of us to maintain and continue to keep those healthy. I will end with making sure that if you didn't see them already in your packet, you have letters from Minute, Minkitla, and MLC, or League of Minnesota Cities, and of course we have the Minnesota Association of Townships. We have all of their support of this bill, and I would ask for consideration to lay this bill over.
All right. So, Representative Bonner, thank you for your presentation. We are going to lay this bill over, so it is laid over. Members, before we adjourn, we have rules in here right after, so if you would be so kind to help our staff by collecting your papers and recycling them, and with that, we are adjourned.